The Life of Iris Chang by HVB 2020-2023 Forward. I read, The Rape of Nanking, and Chang spoke to me loud and clear. Her commanding voice, eloquence, intellect, and message, made me admire righteous and fearless authors even more. During my reading, I was unaware of what had happened to her. Later, looking for more of her insights, I ran across a book called The Woman Who Could Not Forget, with her elegance emblazoned on the cover. So, I decided to purchase it. As I found out about her demise, I began to think. And, my life experiences of the time, made me at first disappointed at the realization that she is no longer here. But, then, I began to believe that she is still here. To Iris Chang, and those to whom Chang cared for most. Background. Chang was born in New Jersey on March 28, 1968 to Taiwanese-American parents. Chang was born into an elite school-educated family, her mother a researcher, her father a university professor. Chang learned of many of the wartime experiences of the Chinese, especially through her grandparents, who themselves escaped the Nanking massacre of World War II. Chang's passion for reading and writing started early in her life, and later helped her excel in school and her career for newspapers, magazines, and book publishers. Chang was extremely dedicated to her works and projects. However, she had a high standard of achievement that some thought excessive. Chang had a warm and complete upbringing with her parents in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. Chang attended the University of Illinois and completed a journalism degree. After marriage, Chang experienced difficulties conceiving, and had her first and only child through a surrogate mother. Chang spent some time writing as a magazine and a newspaper columnist, but was discontent with her career progress there and decided to return to university. Later, Chang earned a master's in writing from Johns Hopkins University. Eventually, Chang was the author of three successful books, The Thread of the Silkworm, the New York Times bestseller, The Rape of Nanking, and The Chinese in America. After these successful book publishings, Chang was conducting research for a fourth book on the Bataan Death March, and was promoting her other books in several U.S. cities between the spring and summer of 2004. In the summer of 2004, Chang had developed symptoms of severe depression and/or mental illness. Chang was found dead in her car on a lonely stretch of road west of State Route 17 in Santa Clara County, near Los Gatos, California, on November 9, 2004. Chang died from what appeared to be a fatal self-inflicted wound. The evidence showed Chang's death was caused by suicide. Known facts. Chang had become increasingly sensitive to criticism of her works, especially of her most popular, The Rape of Nanking. She became fearful for her safety, and presumably for that of her family, and later became paranoid. She became convinced there were forces, her words, more powerful than I could have imagined, which were threatening her in many ways. She also believed those forces were attempting to recruit her, silence her, detain her, and/or kill her in various ways. Chang's mother, Ying Ying, was a pivotal figure in Chang's life, and was extremely concerned and involved during Chang's emotional and mental crisis in 2004. In August 2004, Chang was admitted to Norton Hospital, Kentucky, during a nervous breakdown she experienced while on a research trip there. Per Chang's later discovered suicide note, she was convinced she had been detained at this hospital as a government's attempt to discredit her. Just before and during her hospitalization in Kentucky, Chang reported to have had several encounters with whom she believed were her persecutors. And she noticed many oddities that solidified her beliefs that she was being followed, surveilled, and threatened. For example, Chang reported having seen images on a statusy screen of the room's television set, which she believed was specially transmitted for her. Chang believed Japanese and U.S. government agents had her in their crosshairs for investigation, harassment, or elimination, presumably due to her knowledge, findings, and exposure on what she believed to be highly sensitive subjects of international importance. Weeks prior to her death, Chang visited several websites on suicide and expressed interest in purchasing a weapon. It is unclear whether her web searches for suicide were for self-help, or to attempt to carry it out. Also, it is unknown if Chang's purchase of the weapon was initially aimed at suicide or protection, but according to her mother, these two actions were obvious departures from Chang's previous attitudes. Before her death, Chang was treated for depression and reactive psychosis, and was prescribed medications that could have adverse effects. Prior to her family noticing symptoms of depression, Chang was reportedly an avid taker of supplements and often deprived herself of sleep for her research. For the many months during the writing and touring of her books, Chang reportedly had a poor diet and traveled often. In the months after Chang's son's birth, she noticed some behaviors with her son that she thought were signs of autism. Although these were mild but later medically confirmed, this finding appears to have added to Chang's stress in 2004. Chang's notes. Chang's suicide notes, dated November 8, 2004, reveal a lot about what she was thinking just prior to her death. The first appears to be a note with hope and positive thinking, in contrast with the other two later notes. These revealed the roller coaster-like emotions common in mental illness sufferers. I promise to get up and get out of the house every morning. I will stop by to visit my parents, then go for a long walk. I will follow the doctor's orders for medications. I promise not to hurt myself. I promise not to visit websites that talk about suicide. The second note was a draft to the third, and it reveals Chang's strongly held fears. It was presumably written for her mother, her closest confidant, and appears to express suspicion of her. There are aspects of my experience in Louisville that I will never understand. Deep down, I suspect that you may have more answers about this than I do. I can never shake my belief that I was being recruited, and later persecuted, by forces more powerful than I could have imagined. Whether it was the CIA or some other organization, I will never know. As long as I am alive, these forces will never stop hounding me. The third note read, days before I left for Louisville, I had a deep foreboding about my safety. I suddenly sensed threats to my own life, an eerie feeling that I was being followed in the streets, the white van parked outside my house, damaged mail arriving at my P.O. box. I believe my detention at Norton Hospital was the government's attempt to discredit me. Possible causes. It is impossible to know the exact causes that led Chang to the unfortunate decision to end her life. But, having experienced similar emotional and behavioral patterns as Chang, I believe I can make a valuable assessment of some possible contributing circumstances. Stress and pressures. Chang's status as a bestseller author, I believe, may have put her on the spotlight for ever-increasing performance. Chang reportedly dedicated excessively long hours of research and writing, for many weeks at a time, during the writing of her works. And, her excessive research work reportedly led to self-induced sleep deprivation, which may have caused severe insomnia. Pressures put on herself, and perhaps by her publishers, likely spawned from the large cash advances she received from her publishers. Chang's most successful book, The Rape of Nanking, squarely points a finger at past and current Japanese government actions. Including blame, denial, and ongoing suppression of past Japanese war crimes and atrocities. Also, Chang's third book, The Chinese in America, directly pointed a finger at Anglo-Saxon America for the racism and ill-treatment experienced by Chinese Americans since the 19th century. So, I believe criticisms of her work were perceived as intensifying, organized, and ever-expanding threats. I believe the criticisms and perceived ill intent of her critics were increasingly exaggerated in Chang's mind, due to her mental illness, but some may have been real. There was an organized campaign to discredit Chang, although it is unclear that any intimidation or harassment emanated from these. Reportedly, several Japanese historians and reporters, including the Japanese ambassador, were directly involved in countering and/or discrediting Chang's claims on the Nanking massacre. Chang's perception of threats to her life may have driven her to isolation, perhaps with a feeling of being cornered with no way out. She may have felt she put herself and family in danger, through her research and exposure of what she believed to be formidable powers. Chang's possible paranoia gradually drove her to cut off communication with close friends and family. I believe that communication, during times of depression, is critical, and the lack thereof can cause rapid aggravation of mental illness. Her increasing isolation likely aggravated her condition, and may have ultimately led her to feel defeated by what she may have believed to be forces too great to confront. Other possible basis of Chang's fears. Chang was extremely devoted to her writing and research. She was well versed in computer use, and extensively used the internet for her research and communications. She was computer savvy, and she may have had fears of being exposed through computer surveillance. She wrote two controversial books that required research into intimate histories and records of powerful governments. Chang knew well that she would make a large impact in the perception of the past, present, and future, toward the Japanese and U.S. governments. Chang's concern of her possible revelations, possibly increasingly developed into severe paranoia. Again, these initial concerns may have not been baseless, and certain things that she wrote and said that occurred, could have in fact occurred in some form or fashion. Perhaps, through an unfortunate series of life choices, and the effects of drugs, it progressively led to mental instability. Chang's fears possibly unraveled into the ultimate feeling of hopelessness and powerlessness. I believe Chang thought her own mother was part of a plot to either silence her or recruit her, this perhaps being among the last straws that, in her mind, sealed her fate. All these possibly added to the pain she experienced through her mental illness, and the situation for Chang could hardly be more precarious in the days and hours before her death. Prevention. I believe tragedies like this could be prevented. In the weeks before her death, Iris Chang displayed a pattern of predictable behaviors that could have been seized upon to rescue her. Chang's mounting writing career demands, frequent travel, growing fame and criticism, sudden changes in her behaviors, and research into suicide, were all red flags for mental distress and illness. Frequent travel. Chang's newly found fame and fortune encouraged her to travel throughout the U.S. to tour her books and give many interviews and talks. These continuous travels likely put stresses on Chang's body and mind that compounded other stresses going on at the time. I believe excessive travel is highly unnatural and stressful and should be avoided. Growing fame and criticism. Chang's rapidly growing fame and the subjects of her books surely stepped on the toes of many historians and members of powerful governments. Many of these members and groups openly criticized Chang's work and perhaps her personally. These criticisms likely added to Chang's stresses over time, and these criticisms were likely amplified by Chang's other stresses. I have personally learned that criticisms from other people should be often ignored or kept away from your person. In other words, separate your author from yourself when taking criticism. Alternatively, if you aren't skilled at not allowing criticism to affect you personally, try to avoid it. Persons of fame should be educated on techniques to minimize the psychological effects of criticism. Final comments. Chang's sudden changes in behavior should have been picked up and aggressively acted upon by family, friends, faith and cultural leaders, and medical specialists. Especially, those behavioral departures of purchasing a weapon and researching suicide websites. However, these may be difficult to detect in the life of an active adult, without very close surveillance and knowledge of mental illness. I believe, other out-of-character behaviors and comments should have been taken much more seriously by all close to her. Discussion of Chang's fears and concerns should have been routinely and consistently made to address them and offer Chang rational and calming explanations. I believe it takes a lot of counter-logic, through discussion, or alternative explanations, to begin to chip away at someone's strongly held beliefs. Especially important are counter-arguments for obvious senseless and paranoid fears. I have personally experienced this. I believe imaginative, smart, and creative persons, like Chang, especially need people to keep their thoughts grounded and organized. Lastly, I believe Chang was let down by an undeveloped and commercialized medical establishment, which should have been more interactive, knowledgeable, and effective in her treatment. Despite what occurred, some processes are very difficult, perhaps impossible to halt. And it is left up to us to ensure she and her legacy remains here and present among us. Thank you.